Hello once again and welcome back to the Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Alan Chartok. Last month was the warmest March on record in the United States, according to data from the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. With us today are two experts in weather and climate change who may be able to shed some light on recent atmospheric events, meteorologist Jason Goff, our wonderful friend, Albany native and graduate of Auburn University and the University of Maryland, joined the News Channel 13 First Warning Weather Team in 2004. And Franz Liszt is the executive director of the Pace Energy and Climate Center and a wonderful piano player. A graduate of Boston College Law School and Union College, he also previously led the climate change efforts of New York State from a post within the New York Department of Environmental Conservation. Jason and Franz, welcome to the Vox Pop. The number to call is 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. Again, that is 1-800-348-2551. We're going to have a lot of... gentlemen, I guess a simple question. People are already calling in, but I just wanted to give you both a chance to tell me whether or not you think there is such a thing as global warming. Jason, are you the negative on today's program?
No, I'm not. It is just one of those things. Very interesting to kind of see and hear the debates and do all the things. But no, I am apparently even in my field in the minority in that I do believe that global warming is happening, climate change is occurring, and people are the culprit. Not the only culprit, of course, but. You know, some people don't want to hear that, and some people are glad to hear me say that, but that's just the way that I feel. I actually just read today on the draft from the American Meteorological Society, their statement on climate change, which I won't divulge yet because they haven't put out the final copy, but it's interesting to see all the surveys that they've done to try to ascertain what the temperature is, no pun intended, by a lot of people in my field. And the majority, well, I shouldn't say the majority, but I guess mathematically the majority of meteorologists are having a tough time with it. And I think the reason for that is that you have people that are looking at their area. So with, like you said, the warmest March on record, you have a lot of people that are saying to themselves, well, you know, this has some credence to it. You know, maybe global warming is happening, but they're not thinking about the big picture there. The big word is global. That's the whole issue. You know, go to the folks in the southeast coast of Alaska that had 437 inches of snow in Valdez this year and ask them about global warming, and they might give you a different answer.
Yeah. Well, okay, Franz, I take it you have a slightly more emphatic view of all of this.
I absolutely believe, Alan, that global warming is happening. I think the empirical records, which date back to the late 1800s, those are records, actual temperature records from around the world, bear out an actual average temperature increase over the course of the last century leading up to now, and be going even further back using other methods. You can see temperature tied to atmospheric carbon dioxide levels, which causes
I admit, as the impartial moderator, that I'm very much with you on this. I mean, I think the science is the science. You talk to many of the scientists, and they'll tell you, if not all, you know, it's real. So would you call yourself a agorist?
Sure. I think Al Gore has done a lot to bring this issue into the homes of normal people and to help them understand what climate change is. It's not, we say global warming because average global temperatures are increasing. But as Jason has already pointed out, that doesn't mean that weather changes in favor of warm weather. It just means that average temperatures over time are increasing. It's relatively modest. Weather continues to fluctuate dramatically. And I think that's one of the reasons that meteorologists, they're dealing with the uncertainties of weather on a week-by-week basis. Yeah. Weather's all over the place. Climate is a little bit easier to get your hands around because it's about what were the temperatures taken as an average over the course of a year or over the course of 30 years, really.
Are you to global warming what Jor-El was to his planet? Remember who Jor-El was?
No, I don't.
That Superman's father. That's right.
Oh, jeez.
And he saw it coming. So And Zach, the comic book man, was nodding his head emphatically. Let's go to Paul in Albany. 1-800-348-2551. Go, Paul.
Hi, fellow Albany High graduate. With
hey.
Jason. And I don't have a really heavy-duty question, but I have two quick questions. One is about weather forecasts for the evening. Everywhere I've gone, the weather forecast says the weather for the day is such and such, and tonight's weather seems to be like the overnight low and what's going to happen in the middle of the night.
Right.
Could there be a third category where, because like I do a lot of things in the evening, I call a lot of dances where I have to be outdoors or I'm out at a track meet running, and you know, it's like that's when people are awake, most people. So could there be, maybe you could be the first one in the country to do a forecast daytime, evening, and night.
Well, you know, that's an interesting point because, you know, our business is very uncomplicated, Paul. What our customers, that is, our viewers want, we will give them. And certainly we pay more attention to that in this part of the country as the days get longer and people do things outside more and more. But, yeah, I mean, you know, we kind of take it for granted because we're so immersed in it that saying, all right, well, today's high was 57. The overnight low is going to be 30. So the temperatures are going to gradually fall in between. But, yeah, more point forecasts. Certainly we can always use those. And I appreciate the suggestion. I will implement it.
Well, you know, it's tough because I'll tell you what's tough about this. You know, in my house, I burn every spring, and we're allowed to in Massachusetts till the 1st of May, which we may never be able to do because of the red alerts that
right.
have been taking place here. But then if it's 50 in the day or 48 in the day, that's fine. But if it goes down too low at night, and this is why Paul has such a good idea, then everything could freeze. If you've turned the hose on, which is a very big deal at my house, you have mm-hmm. to really do a lot of stuff. Then you should know that it's going to be 22 and that your house is going to be ruined.
That's a good point. Yeah, I mean, you know, we want to let people, especially when you're talking about that critical leap there from above freezing to below freezing, of course. But, you know, to Paul's point, too, if he's going out to dinner,
yeah,
he doesn't care what the temperature is going to be at 4 in the morning. He wants to know what it's going to be at, you know, 8:30 at night. So
I
like all three. So
okay, good.
Yeah.
And then I have a question related with that about frost.
Yeah.
Being somebody that has to go out occasionally on a cold, frosty night or a frosty morning, and I don't want to be scraping my windshield. Is there a way to predict, like it's usually in the winter or late fall or early spring, is there a way to predict whether there's going to be windshield frost?
Well, yeah, I mean, first of all, your dew points have to be up. I mean, it's just a measure of moisture in the atmosphere. So if there's enough moisture, rather than have it be some kind of dew that you might see on a cool, you know, late spring, early summer morning, you're going to have frost. So that's just a function of the available moisture in the atmosphere. And so, and it's also important to note that, you know, if we do say an overnight low is, say, 35, that doesn't mean that it's going to be 35 everywhere. You know, cold air is heavier than warm air, so it's going to settle into some of these lower spots. And so, you know, anytime it's in the 30s, you know, and that's a really big deal, obviously, Paul, with the airlines because they have to to spray their wings off because even a little bit of frost can be a lot of trouble for the lift.
So, Paul, do you have a garage?
Yeah, but sometimes I don't get a chance to use it, but it's filled up with stuff.
If there's any question, then you put the car in the garage and you don't have to worry.
Right, this is the winter. We had workers there the entire winter.
Oh, boy.
Is there a way to predict the dew point temperature? Can you go online to find that?
Yeah, we forecast it just as we would temperatures.
Okay.
So just go to NOAA.
Hey, yep. Paul, we're done with you. Anything else?
I just want to say I go back to the days before Ray Faulkner started weather.
I'm
a big weather junkie, so thank you for I've been waiting for years to call in on this program.
Well, you got it, Paul. Thank you.
Phones
are ringing. There are two free phones now. They won't be for long. That was Paul from Albany. Franz, did you want to add anything to that last go-around? No. Franz is here sort of as the climate changer.
Yes.
And Jason is here as the sort of meteorologist.
Thank you. That'll keep me out of trouble, too. That's good.
Well, right.
Thanks.
Right. We'll go to Eli in New Hartford. Okay. Eli, you're on.
Hello. I'm most concerned with the politics of global warming.
Mm.
That's viable.
We're told that 97% of the scientists who actually study this issue believe that it is man-made and that it is going to be harmful to our society.
Yeah.
However, the most recent polls indicate that the opposite is true, that over 50% of the citizenry believe that global warming is not a reality, and almost many of them are of the belief that it's actually a hoax.
Okay, so what troubles you about this, Eli?
What troubles me?
Yeah, in other words, you have an educated group of people in this country who have studied the problem, and they tell you it's man-made. Then you have people who get yelled at by Rush Limbaugh and other people, and they tell you it's not man-made. So who are you going to believe, the experts, the scientists, you know, or the people who have no idea what they're talking about?
Well, that's what everybody has to ask themselves. I mean, I would submit that I think a lot of the negative global warming faction arises straight out of the energy companies.
Right.
Their use of Madison Avenue and their use of the airways. They are spending millions of dollars to perpetrate the idea that it's a hoax.
Okay,
I liken it to your topic yesterday, cigarettes. The same thing was done by our cigarette corporations in the 50s and 60s when our medical scientists had obvious evidence that this was harmful, that it was cancerous, but they fought the issue and fought the issue, and they were very successful for it.
Okay, Eli, because there are a lot of people lined up behind you, I want to give our wonderful Franz a chance to talk about this. Doctor?
I'm very glad that Eli drew the connection to cigarette smoking. The president of the U.S. Academies of Science testified before Congress a number of years ago, more than 4 years ago now, but he was asked that question by one of the congressional representatives on the committee. He said the question was, do you think there is more evidence that cigarettes cause cancer or that man's activities are causing climate change? And without skipping a beat, the head of the National Academy said, without a doubt, there is much more evidence that our burning of fossil fuels is causing global warming and climate change. So,
hey, Eli, thanks for the call. Appreciate it very much.
Thank you.
Yep, good call. 1-800-348-2551. One free phone right now. And we'll go to Frank in Pleasant Valley. Oh, no. No, we won't. We'll have a small break, 7 to 8 seconds, and then we'll be right back. Then we'll go to Frank in Pleasant Valley, where everybody smiles.
Support for WAMZ comes from East Heaven Hot Tubs and Paradise Spa, Northampton, Massachusetts. Offering private hot tub room rentals with indoor or outdoor rooftop tubs, massages for couples and individuals, eastheaven.com for reservations. Ashokan Center, Olive Bridge, New York, a classroom in the wild helping schools, organizations, and individuals reconnect with nature, history, and the arts, ashokancenter.org. Richards Fuel and Heating, East Hampton, Massachusetts, providing high-efficiency gas and oil heating systems to the Pioneer Valley for over 45 years, now expanding into the Westfield area, richardsfuel.com. And My Market, New Paltz and Poughkeepsie, specializing in local, organic produce, Murray's Chickens, Applegate Deli products, and more, daily lunch and soup specials, stores in New Paltz and Poughkeepsie.
And we're back. And we are back with two experts, Jason Goff, our Albany native and graduate of Auburn University, the University of Maryland, Channel 13, First Warning Weather Team, and Franz Litz is the executive director of the Pace Energy and Climate Center, where he also teaches music. Okay, so that's not true. It's just a bad Alan joke. Okay, let's go to Frank in Pleasant Valley. Okay, Frank, you're on.
Yeah, hi, gentlemen. Great show. I have two quick questions about hurricanes, and I'll ask them, and then I'll hang up. And
No. Don't hang up, because we may say, no, that's, you know,
yeah,
great,
okay,
or we may want to contest with you.
Sure.
Go ahead.
Okay. Well, my first question is, hurricanes typically travel from, the warm Atlantic, Caribbean, and seem to be heading west, and I just don't understand how that happens when you have the jet stream, heading from west to east from California across the United States. And secondly, is why are there no incidences of hurricanes that seem to end up in the Gulf of Mexico and then turn east towards the Floridian coast? If that's happened, it's been a rare occurrence in my opinion, but Gentlemen, if you could just address those, that would be appreciated.
Well, Frank, you stay right there. On the second question, Jason is already moving his head back and forth in a negative fashion. Yeah. So do you want to take second first, or do you want to go first?
Yeah, Frank, can you clarify that second question for me? You're saying that hurricanes in the Gulf of Mexico do not turn to the east?
Well, it seems that most of the hurricanes that I know of late that end up in off the Florida coast, you know, will go through Miami, you know, the Atlantic side. But are there ever occurrences where hurricanes in the Gulf of Mexico will actually turn northeast and, you know, hit the Florida coast? They seem to go through Alabama and Mississippi, Louisiana, Texas. But
yeah, that, you know what, that's just luck, if you want to think of it as such, because, you know.
Oh, it is.
I mean,
okay.
Just off the top of my head, I can tell you, you know, Opal in 1995, a hurricane that I actually went through when I was in Auburn, hit just outside of Panama City, Florida. Back in 2004, you had Charlie that was heading toward Tampa, actually strengthened and took a hard right and went into Punta Gorda and Port Charlotte there, did a lot of damage as a Category 4.
Okay.
And then you also had Wilma, which was just a rolling ball of butcher knives at the lowest pressure ever recorded in a hurricane, and it ran very quickly across the lower panhandle of Florida, first on the west coast and then right across West Palm Beach and out to sea from there.
Oh,
climatology
okay.
plays a large role in this, and you typically will see these tracks that will occur as you head into the latter part of hurricane season, late September into the month of October. To get to your first question, as far as storms, that's a good question. As far as, you know, why do hurricanes move their way east, rather west, instead of going east because of the way that the predominant wind flow is? The short answer to that is they're steered that way, typically by what's called the Bermuda High, which is a big so-called semi-permanent high-pressure area that will set up. It's also the same mechanism that's responsible for kicking us up into the 90s through the summer with the high humidity and all that. That's all the Bermuda High. And essentially what that does is it acts like a gear shift, and it just kind of catches those storms and just drives them in. So it's the steering currents that drive these storms, because they are sort of their own separate entities, and they go wherever
right.
they're pushed.
Franz?
Yeah. Are you expecting a big hurricane season this coming summer?
To be honest with you, I have not checked, and I don't really care, because I'm not saying that to be rude, but, you know, hurricane, it doesn't make any difference if we have 50 hurricanes. The idea is, where are they going to go, and are people ready to deal with them? That's the important question. And there's more and more
sure.
out there saying, you know, it doesn't really do a whole lot of good to put out a hurricane forecast in April. That's no disrespect to Dr. Gray at Colorado State, but it doesn't really tell you anything.
Frank,
okay.
Yeah, the one thing I like.
Frank.
One more thing on hurricanes there. The Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change came out with a special report on the risks of extreme events and disasters just recently, late last year. And they were unable to reach a lot of findings about the effect of climate change on hurricanes. But the one finding they did make, which is, I'm sure, of interest to this caller, is that it appears, and they use the word likely, which means they have a 66% probability. It appears that hurricanes are taking a poleward trajectory more often than they used to in the past, and they think that this may be caused by climate change. The scientific community has been very, very careful about linking climate change and global warming to hurricanes, but that's one area, the trajectory. If it is shifting poleward, then we could see more hurricanes like Irene last year landing in the Northeast rather than down in the Gulf.
Hey, thank you. Hey, Frank, thanks for the call. Appreciate it.
Well, thank you. Bye.
Bye. 1-800-348-2551, and we'll go to John in Pittsfield. John, you're on.
Yeah, I guess I'd just like to mention first, before I ask a question, as far as the whole debate of climate change and where we've come, it's almost ludicrous to think that back in the early 80s, they were still smoking cigarettes in hospitals. And almost every unit other than your special units like ICU, CCU,
yeah.
and stuff.
Okay.
And it's just a statement. It's amazing how far we go in thinking and what we have done in the past and what we know
so
now.
So the analogy, John, I take it the point you're trying to make is, hey, we know about this now and we got to take some action. Yeah.
There you go. Yeah. But anyway, I was just wondering too, like some of the other analysis to take into consideration when you're, you know, studying climate change. I know locally, soil temperature, there's been a dramatic increase in soil temperature in the last decade or so locally, and the lack of frost has been noticeable too. I know some of the water temperatures and some of the lakes and rivers and stuff have been dramatically higher than they were 20 years ago. I guess that would go probably for salt water and ocean and whatnot.
Okay, John, we're going to let Franz take a shot.
There's a terrific study that came out of New York. It was researchers from Columbia, Cornell, as well as the City University in New York. And it was called ClimAid, sponsored by the New York State Energy Research and Development Authority. And it documents empirically changes for New York State. And for listeners that are in Vermont and Western Mass and Connecticut, you could look at this report and really extrapolate. There isn't going to be too much difference between what they found in east of the Hudson River and the areas where you reside. But it's a long and very well-documented report. I'd encourage listeners to check
Franz,
that out.
So, Franz, in this, and Jason, you can come into this one, too. I'd love to know whether these extreme weather events we've had this year, you know, the great floods and the Hudson Valley and the rest, whether you guys believe that a case could be made this is global warming. Franz?
There are some in the scientific community that are making that case. I think it's too soon to say that we have the kind of 97% level of confidence. One of your callers mentioned 97% of scientists believe human beings are causing global warming. That's true. We're far below 97% when it comes to saying extreme weather
specific events. And Jason?
I totally agree. I think that, you have to be very careful about that, because if you try to draw that straight line in between the two, what you are doing then is you are opening up the door for another discussion that could, what's the best way to put this, kind of hurt your cause, so to speak.
Because then,
people can say, well, you can't immediately make that, and they're right. So you can't just say, all right, well, because Hurricane Irene hit here, global warming is happening. Is it possible? Yes. But are we ready to say that is definitely the case? Of course not. But as long as it gets people talking, that's fine.
You gentlemen, thanks an awful lot, John.
Alan, you took my last question. That was the increase in local tornadic thunderstorms.
Okay. Yes.
Can I just mention one thing? We have become a slave to fossil fuels, and it is a form of energy, as slavery was back in the day. That was a form of energy, and we were very afraid to get off of slavery, and we're very afraid to get off of fossil fuels.
Very interesting point. Thank
you,
John.
Thank you. Bye.
Okay. 1-800-348-2551. That opens up just one free phone, because everything else, you guys are doing such a great job. Everything else has been, every other phone is blinking. Just little phone 3 is not blinking now. But we'll fix that, won't we? Let's go to Paul in Schenectady. Paul in Schenectady, go.
Yes, it's a question about how to compare the winter / summer of 97, 98 to what we just experienced, because of the fact that in 98, March the 31st, the record was 89 degrees, but it was also the hottest day of the year. And I was wondering if there was any correlation this year with what that winter / following summer was like.
Well, it's interesting, Paul. I mean, it's easy to kind of say, well, if this, then that, because that's kind of the way that we're taught. But weather doesn't really work that way. Patterns set up, sometimes they take a while to set up and a while to break down.
Uh-huh.
A perfect example of that is the one we just got out of. I mean, we were in that pattern from even the third week in October all the way through just a few weeks ago.
Right.
So it's difficult to say, well, because of this, then that. To kind of throw another year at you, back in May of 2002, when we had that 2-inch snowfall, Niska Day in 2002 on May the 18th, that was a very hot summer, too. So, you know, you can't really say, well, because of this, then that. Seasons don't necessarily depend on each other, and you can't say, well, because we had a mild winter, we're going to have a hot summer or a cool summer. So, you know, you can look at those things, and if you had enough data to make that case, then great. But, you know, just looking back at one other winter just is not enough data.
Franz Litz?
Yeah, James Hansen has a great analogy for this phenomenon, and he calls it loading the climate dice, loading the weather dice. And, you know, we have to remember that a year ago, last winter, we had a colder than average winter here in these parts. And this year we've had a record warm winter. You can think of climate change and the warming forcing as a kind of increasing the probability of a warm winter. But that doesn't mean you're not going to sometimes roll the die and end up with a colder than normal winter. We're still going to have weather variations even in a much in a changing climate.
Important concept. Hey, Paul, thanks for calling.
Thank you.
Let's go to Pamela in Troy. Pamela, you're on.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I am pretty convinced that we probably are having climate change, but somebody posted an article recently that referred to a talk by somebody called Lord Monckton, who seemed to have a lot of interesting arguments why it was all bunk. And I was just curious what your guest had to say about the various arguments for and against based on some of the deniers.
Lord Monckton is one of the UK's, United Kingdom's climate skeptics, very vocal. I guess just generally speaking, what I do when I hear one of the points, I'm not a climatologist, so I need to rely on climatologists to debunk the so-called deniers. I go to realclimate.org. Realclimate.org usually picks up any of the latest arguments. There haven't been many new arguments raised, new challenges to the climate change evidence and projections. It tends to be the same ones coming back up over and over again. So most of them are there right on that website, and it's run by climatologists, and they try to explain in very plain terms why a given point is just bunk.
So give it to us one more time. This is the website.
Realclimate.org.
Realclimate.org. Jason, you want to check in?
No, he's okay. The expert on that. I'll defer to him.
Hey, Pamela, thanks for a wonderful call. Appreciate it.
Okay, thank you.
And we'll go to Eric in Gardner. Okay, Eric, how's it up there in Gardner?
Hey, how's it going, Alan? Yeah. Long-time listener, first-time caller. Quick question about, there was a Russian scientist who came out at a climate change conference with evidence that he had been gathering over the last several years about solar flare cycles, and he was predicting that after the peak at the end of this year or the end of next year, that we were going to wind up in something similar to the Maunder minimum, where we're actually going to see a serious cold spell for, you know, decades, is what he was talking about. And I was wondering if anyone could speak to that or if they even know what I'm talking about.
Everybody's shaking their heads around here.
Yeah, I did not see that. I mean, you know, there's been a lot of talk about solar flares and different phases that the sun goes through, and some storms have been rather big this year. But as far as how it relates to, you know, weather, certainly local weather, that's a work in progress.
Yeah, but Eric's question is an interesting one in that it seems to me, and I'm really not up on this stuff, but that many of the deniers looking for another alternative rationale almost always go to solar flares.
Solar flares is a very common topic that's brought up, and it's dealt with extensively in that realclimate.org site I just mentioned. I want to say that the climatologists have attempted in their projections, which, by the way, have held up quite nicely. As time goes on, we take those projections, which started as early as the late 70s and early 80s, and we compare them to the temperature increases that we've seen. And those projections, if anything, have largely been overly conservative. And what we've actually seen in the climate is our temperatures that are higher than projected. Those models, those projections take into account things like solar flares. They take into account other feedback mechanisms, such as the polar ice cap reflects the sun, you know, when it's there in the wintertime, which tends to reflect the sun back into space, which tends to decrease warming. All of those feedback loops are accounted for in the modeling that's done.
Eric, thanks for the call. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Right. And we'll go to Joe in New Baltimore. Two free phones, 1-800-348-2551. Go, Joe.
Yes. My understanding from what I've heard on WAMC, as a matter of fact, is that science up until the 70s always stated that the Earth's climate was governed by the sun for millennia on end, and that somewhere in the 70s that no longer became true, and that the Earth's climate is now governed by the amount of methane, water vapor, and carbon dioxide that we release. Do you have a comment on that?
Yeah, the sun is still the key factor. What the gases do, they trap the heat in the atmosphere. So the sun comes in, that's where the warmth comes from. The question is, why does it stay here, and why doesn't it get reflected back into the space the way it used to be? And the answer is more heat-trapping gases in the atmosphere.
All right, very good. Well, then let me ask you this. Compared to the rest of the planet, how many metric tons of carbon dioxide were released by human activity last year?
The answer is it doesn't matter. The question is the incremental.
Whoa!
I'm the moderator. Hey, Joe.
Bye, Joe.
You know, in a minute, I'll just cut you off. We always let the other guy answer his answer. Oh well,
there he goes.
That makes sense. I've come to expect that. Let's go to Art in Albany. Okay, Art, you're on. Could you hang on a second? I blew it again, and we have to take a short break. Stay right there. We'll be right back.
Yes, sir.
Support for Vox Pop comes from Hildene, the Lincoln Family Home, Manchester, Vermont. Historic home, Pullman car, museum store, and walking trails open daily year-round, 9:30 to 4:30, hildene.org. Steel Engineering and Consulting, Troy, New York. Addressing building problems through engineering investigations and architectural designs, steeleengineering.com. Ward's Nursery and Garden Center, Great Barrington. Featuring dahlia and gladiola bulbs, pansies, violas, orchids, tropical houseplants, and eclectic gardening gear, wardsnursery.com. And the Pilates Principal, Loudonville, New York. Offering core strengthening, stretching, and golf and tennis cross training on Pilates exercise equipment, lathampilates.com.
1-800-348-2551. There are two free phones. Get in, get on board, everybody. Let's go to Art in Albany. Okay, Art, you're on.
Hi, Dr. Allen. I have a couple of show topics that I want to recommend for Vox Pop, but I have two basic questions for you.
Okay, but today we're talking about climate change. So
okay, I have two basic questions.
Okay.
One is the ratio of snow to rain. And the second one is the difference between a typhoon and a hurricane.
Okay.
All right.
Jason, you want to start?
Well, real quickly, I'll answer your second question first. A typhoon is something that occurs in the Eastern Hemisphere. That's what they name. That's how they name them. But they're essentially the same thing, although typhoons can be actually stronger than Atlantic hurricanes. They're the same type of animal. So,
does it have to do with which direction the circle goes in, or is that just naive?
Well, in the Northern Hemisphere and the Southern Hemisphere, yes, they rotate differently. But in the Eastern Hemisphere and the Western Hemisphere, so specifically, if you're talking about a storm that's going to hit the east coast of the United States, it's a hurricane. Yeah. If it's going to hit the east coast of, say, Japan or Okinawa, then it's a typhoon. Okay. So that's the only – they're the same animal. They're just different nomenclature there. Now, let me ask you this. When you're talking about a snow-rain ratio, are you talking about in a season? Or are you talking about water content? What are you –
Yeah, I'm speaking about, if you get, a feet of snow, what would that equate to if it had it been converted or an actual rain?
Well, it depends on the situation. This time of year, if we were to get a snowstorm, typically the ratios are going to be considerably lower. So you're talking about like a 5-to-1, a 6-to-1, maybe even less than that. It's that real heavy, wet snow that's easy to make snowballs and things like that. If we were to get a big snowstorm in the middle of January, the liquid to snow ratio can be much higher. Our average in Albany is around 10-to-1. That's the average.
All right. Thank you, Art.
Thank you.
Yep. Good call. Let's go to Jill in Waterford. Jill, you're on.
Hi, gentlemen. I have more of a comment than a question. I'm a skier. I'm a member of a couple of ski clubs. And I also work at a couple of the ski areas in Vermont. Well, at least I used to. I just work at one now. But I can tell you that any time any of my climate change doubting friends or family talk to me, I can tell them without a doubt that it exists, because skiers seem to see it more blatantly. I mean, there's definitely less snowfall in general over the last 20 years, and the winters are definitely warmer over the last 20 years. Years ago when I worked at Stratton and I worked the races that the kids did, a lot of times we had to cancel the races because it was sub-zero or single digits. It was too cold.
Okay, Jill, we're going to let Jill. We're going to let friends.
My point is, last year we had to cancel the races because we had no snow and it was too warm to make it.
Okay, good.
Jill, you're right. And the report that I mentioned earlier that NYSERDA commissioned found that winter warming has exceeded 4.4 degrees Fahrenheit since 1970. So that means average temperatures in winter since 1970 have gone up 4.4 degrees Fahrenheit compared to the period before then. And that compares to a year-round average temperature increase of 2.4 degrees Fahrenheit. So we've seen more warming in winter than we have throughout the year. I also want to make the point, Alan, if I may.
You may.
I think it's very important for listeners to distinguish what they read in the New York Times or The Economist or worldwide publications. You really, impacts are going to vary depending on the region that you live in. And so that's why studies like the one that NYSERDA did are so important, because there are regional variations. And for example, the projections are showing not too much in the way of additional precipitation. It's just that in some areas of the world, they're expecting a lot more precipitation. But here they're expecting them to come in fewer precipitation events, so, you know, heavier storms. And because winters will be warmer, you will see less snow and
more
rain.
Rain and sleet and whatnot.
Well, Jill, let me jump in here and ask Franz and see what he says about, and Jason Goff, what they think about this. When we saw, the Al Gore movie, there were these projections of water coming up over Manhattan. Mm-hmm. Have we seen any substance, anything to indicate that this is actually happening with these projections and with this warmer water and all the rest coming up?
So empirically, the measurements are that in the lower Hudson and the coastal areas of New York City and Long Island, they've seen a 1 foot increase in the level of the sea since 1900. Some of that is attributable to climate change. Some of it is not.
That's a lot, 1 foot.
It is a lot, 1 foot.
The big key variable
is whether ice that is currently on land ends up melting. So we're talking about the Greenland ice sheet, mm-hmm. and we're talking about the ice on Antarctica.
And that is happening.
That is happening faster than some of the projections made, but no one has yet been willing to say that it's a certainty. The question will be, hey, do we get to a point where our polluting of the atmosphere leads to a point where we can't turn back, and it sets in motion the melting of those ice sheets, which are really going to determine sea level. I mean,
I just ask one more thing before related to that?
Sure.
Can't we just look back? I mean, everybody's looking forward from 1 year to the next to the next. Can't we just look back and see how the pattern has been changing?
Yes, we can. And that's why you're seeing even Republican presidential candidates changing the way they talk about climate change. The empirical record has caught up to the projections. There's a paper posted on theatlantic.com yesterday that looks at Jim Hansen, who's one of the most preeminent climatologists turned activist, because he just got tired of talking to a wall. He did a paper in 1981 projecting temperature increases. And the paper that's explored in The Atlantic looked at his projections. And guess what? His 1981 projections were conservative compared to what's actually happened in the empirical record.
Yeah, but let me jump in and ask you guys this question. I don't remember much from earth science back in the day or from geology class, but didn't we go through an ice age that came after some other global warming?
There is natural variation, and the caller that called and abruptly dropped off, I would have said to him had I had the chance.
How do you let you finish your sentence?
Yeah, yeah. There is natural variability in the climate, and the caller was referring to natural emissions of carbon dioxide. We human beings, living organisms, give off carbon dioxide. Plants give off oxygen and take carbon dioxide in. There is a carbon balance, and looking back to prior cooling periods, science does try to figure out, well, why? And sometimes it's attributed to volcanic activity, which put ash into the atmosphere that prevented the sun from reaching the surface of the earth, leading to cooling. Lots of different explanations come in to try
meteor
to explain them.
Perhaps.
Yeah, yeah. There, you name it. But I think we have to be careful when we look back at those and we say, well, is the scientific explanation satisfactory for that dip in temperature?
Yeah, but whatever did in the dinosaurs may have also done in the climate, right?
Yeah, I mean there are ties to periods of mass extinction.
Hey, Jill, thanks for the call.
Well, as far as I'm concerned, you don't have to convince me.
Okay, well, good. We have others to work on here. Okay, let's go to Lisa in Woodstock. Lisa, you're on.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
My questions are for Franz Liszt. I look forward to hearing him every Wednesday a little bit before 4 o'clock. And my first question is, what has happened in the past just maybe 2 or 3 years that we've gone from, you know, everything being let's educate ourselves, let's, you know, everything is about green technology, and now all of a sudden everyone's doubting climate change.
When you say everyone, you clearly don't mean that.
Well, no, I don't mean that.
I mean, we got three people in
this
room. But
there seems to be a movement. Even my 12-year-old son has noticed that in school, no one believes in it anymore.
What radio station do they listen to?
I don't know what they listen to, but they're mostly Democrats.
Anyway,
the other thing is, what can we do just as people, you know, single people, to get, I guess, legislation passed to subsidize alternative energy? And can we do things like, maybe we have legislation so that we don't have plastic bags anymore at grocery stores? Mm-hmm. Just little things like that. Is that important? Mm-hmm.
Let me start with your first observation. I agree with you. Even politicians who and government leaders who previously spoke a lot about climate change and the clean energy revolution have shied away. I attribute it to the midterm elections last time around. We saw such a big pendulum swing there,
mm-hmm.
That a lot of Democrats and a lot of pro energy efficiency, pro clean energy folks are just not talking about it as much. I will note that President Obama mentioned it in his State of the State address this year. He's the first president to say the words climate change in a State of the State, and he did it again this year. People do look for leadership from the top, so maybe there is some hope. What can you do? I think you're doing it. Communicate what you said is a great suggestion. Communicate with your congressional representatives,
mm-hmm.
your senators, and remember, all levels of government matter. It's not just those in D.C. Governor Cuomo should hear from you. Your state legislators should hear from you.
I know,
okay.
Lisa, and he has. Hey, Lisa, thank you very much for the great call.
Thank you for a great show.
Okay, bye. Let's go to Suzanne in Dutchess County. Suzanne.
Hi. I just have a couple of things, and then you can pick which one you want to talk about. One is they were did a special on the Titanic, and they were talking about the weather conditions and the ice conditions being different that year than it had been, you know, say in 100 years when they look back at the records and the melting and blah blah. And another thing is I noticed that they're extending the carbon credits, so they're expecting that means, you know, that they're expecting us not to be cutting the carbon so quickly. So they're now allowing people to buy carbon credits, you know, as an alternative investment for till 2020, which is means they don't expect so much improvement so fast. I think that's what it means. And then we have energy policy that, Central Hudson has been bought by a Canadian company, and I'm just wondering how we're going to control of our energy policies when it's all international.
Okay, I don't want to be in
bed. Okay, take one.
go ahead. Let's Jason, we haven't heard from you lately. Do you want to say something?
Well, yeah, I mean, I don't know a whole lot about the weather patterns back in 1912, but I have read some things on there that the ice was a little farther south than it normally would have been that time of year. And that was one of the reasons that the captain of the Titanic didn't really think a whole lot about it, even though there had been warnings that there were icebergs in the area, and he just said, the heck with it, I'm just going to go full steam ahead. The other kind of thing that just popped into my head sort of relating to that, and Franz, maybe you can talk about this. I read a very interesting thing just not too long ago about the natural gas surplus that we have, and that they're afraid in October we're going to run out of places to put the surplus. And what the...
Whoa, and then...
And then what? So... It's at its lowest price it's in the last 10 years, and they're also talking about some of the, you know, because a lot of parts of the South, down in the Southwest, in Texas where I lived, a lot of places are getting their energy from burning of coal, and these coal-burning places are now looking to use natural gas because it's cheaper. So maybe this will be a good thing in the long run. Again, the surplus is a function of the mild winter that we had, and we just didn't need a whole heck of a lot of it.
That's a great point.
Yeah, low natural gas prices generally mean good things for the climate, at least in the near term. And that's because exactly what you said, Jason, it's going to supplant coal generation, mostly to create electricity in other parts of the country. But natural gas has about half the carbon content of coal. So when we switch from coal to natural gas, it's like getting a big reduction in carbon emissions. So
Suzanne, I'm sorry we have to go on, but I want to try to give everybody a chance, okay?
Oh, thank you.
Yeah. We've got Susan on the throughway. Okay, Susan, make it quick. We're running out of time here.
I'll try. Environmental effects of some of the green energy don't show up until we do them on a widespread basis, such as hydroelectric and windmills. So my question has to do with geothermal energy. When you're taking heat from inside the Earth and transferring it to the atmosphere, that seems like it would double the gradient compared to just adding heat to the atmosphere like we do with our usual.
Okay, that's the question.
Thanks.
Now look.
I'd like to hang up and listen on the radio.
No. Stay on. Go ahead.
Yeah, thanks for the question, Susan. It's a great one. I think when we're thinking about our energy choices, we have to realize that there are downsides to every choice we make. We just mentioned natural gas, and we don't have to tell listeners of this station some of the environmental downsides of extracting natural gas. So when we choose natural gas, we're making a choice. Same with wind, same with geothermal. The biggest impact of geothermal, biggest concern that I'm aware of is the triggering of small earthquakes when you go very deep underground, and that's been well documented in geothermal projects. I have not heard anything to the effect that bringing the heat from the core up exacerbates warming. That doesn't mean it's not true. I just haven't heard it.
Just logically, would you expect if it was done on a very widespread basis that effects might show up?
Well, so remember that the heat-trapping gas keep the heat in, keep it close to the surface of the Earth. But in the absence of that gas, the heat would escape into space, right? So again, we're looking at what's keeping the heat from escaping into space. My gut reaction to your point would be that more heat might have trouble getting out with more heat-trapping gases, but I'm not aware of any study that looks at that. Interesting question, though.
But
thank you. You're not
burning anything to get that geothermal heat.
Right. Yeah. And so it's preferable to the alternative.
Right. I understand that the gases would be different. All right, thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks.
All right. We are literally out of time. I'm going to go to Gary and Kinderhook. Gary, I'm not going to allow this to be a question. What you can do is just make a statement. Go ahead, because we're literally out of time.
I'm just going to say one of the tipping points, I think, with global warming is the under the ice sheets, you know, in the Antarctic, is the methane that's trapped under there, and it gets released when it melts, and that would add a significant amount of methane to the atmosphere. And
now, that is a good statement. I see guys shaking their heads in affirmation. You've done well, Gary. Thank you for the call. Appreciate it.
Sure.
Okay, so we are just about out of time. I want to thank everyone who called in and apologize to Mark, who got left on the phone. Poor Mark. Thanks to Jason Goff and Franz Litz for joining us today. Underwriting support for the Vox Pop comes from A.D. George Construction. For over 25 years, serving the Pioneer Valley's residential construction need, remodeling additions, kitchens, bathrooms, porches, home office space, and more. From the design and planning to its completion, 413-256-6752, the Unitarian Universalist Congregation of the Capital Region, guided by seven principles, including the inherent worth and dignity of each person. Capital Region, u.u.org for information. And Live Nation, presenting an evening with Yanni at SPAC Tuesday, June 12th, livenation.com for tickets. Thanks again, everybody, for joining us on the Vox Pop. Our engineer has been Zach Malloy. Your calls were answered by Colleen O'Connell. Our producer is Patrick Donges. I'm Alan Shartok, and I want to thank once again our wonderful guests today, Jason Goff and Franz Litz, for joining us. Stay tuned now for a news update.